We acted the cliché. We melted with laughter. Not the prickly melt that comes from sitting on a hot stove, but the cool, relaxing melt in defiance of chemistry, like dropping deep into a liquid feather bed. We didn't know or remember the reason for laughing. There was a film, yes, a dumb, sad man with hair like wheat and round eyes like paddling pools, another man with a moustache like a toy hearth brush, and many other people and things. Blondes, irate managers, stepladders, whitewash, all the stuff of farce. And there was a darkened opera house, growing cardboard trees and shining wooden moons. I shall never know why we laughed so much. Perhaps other films had been as funny, but this one seemed to contain for us a total laughter, a storehouse of laughter, like a hive where we children, spindly legged as bees, would forever bring our foraging of fun to mellow and replenish this almost unbelievably collapsing mirth. Nor was it the kind of laughter that cheats by turning in the end to tears or needing reinforcement with imagery. It was simply like being thrown on a swing into the sky and the swing staying there, as in one of those trick pictures we had seen so often and marvelled at. Divers leaping back to the springboard, horses racing back to the starting barrier. It was like stepping off the swing and promenading the sky. After the film, we managed somehow to walk home. The afternoon was ragged with leaves and the dreary, hungry untidiness of a child's 4:30. Faces and streets seemed wet and serious. The hem of sky undone, hung down dirty and grey. But the laughter stayed with us, crippling, floating, rolling, aching, dissolving. It must have been a comic picture, our mother said, not knowing, when she saw our faces. The refractory, or disturbed part of the hospital known as Park House, was built a safe distance from the bright admission ward with those pastel walls were hung with soothing seascapes and sunset-occupied skies, where two-toned autumnal rugs matched the golden bedspreads and where floral curtains bunched themselves across wide-open, unbarred windows. The door of the admission ward stood unlocked in a modern way, and the path led to a lawn, bright green like a lawn in a shop window where a wax man was mowing. In the centre, a marooned willow wept with no pool. Birds flipped themselves dry and hot in the empty birdbath. Circling the lawn was a high red brick wall, dressed in a seeming way with slow-burning ivy. A country retreat. Yes, a country retreat. Gentle patients, exclaiming at the beauty and calm of it all, wandered in and out of the ward, or sat at meals in the light, airy dining room with napkins matching the tablecloths spread in front of them. They said grace. They pursued civilised conversation. Park House squatted directly opposite the door of the hospital kitchen. Like a dirty brick imbecile waiting for food, its buildings were old and leaked in the winter, water running down the inside of the plaster walls, the day room blessed with a timely and multiple personality served as day room, dining room and playroom, a huge space lined with long, heavy tables like cast-off banquet tables and long wooden benches split and seamed with dirt and shiny from being sat on. And the people who played and dined and spent the day there, they were the violent, the uncontrollably deluded and hallucinated, those who had murdered or would murder, the sadly deformed, the speechless. And up on the wall, sitting primly and securely in its wire cage, the electric clock looked down, saying tick-tock, tick-tock, the way clocks are supposed to. It was a strange, unreal sound, like the sound of knitting. It was as if someone had mistaken the Last Judgment for an afternoon tea party or a sewing bee. For what communication could the clock hold with that world where time tribal and primitive, told itself not by hours and minutes, but by years of the lion and the panther and days of the hurricane, by hours of getting up, using the toilet, eating, going to bed, by days of sausages and saveloys, of bathing, of hair being combed with kerosene to discourage the lice, of head operations, of official inspections. The weeks had no name, not the months, not the years. Once, on a privileged walk, there was for me the time of the striped waterfall, but I am not sure if it actually happened, for I was butcher frocked and hallucinated with my name on a list called prefrontal leucotomy. The patients of Parkhouse could not, of course, be taken to the hospital hall. The way there led through winding, urine-scented passages, past dormitories where ghostly, wildly staring men exposed themselves, standing in rows by the windows or pressed their faces up to the glass like people trying to climb in or out of mirrors. Sometimes we learned weeks afterward that a dance had been held at a hospital hall, or a concert to which members of the public came, and where the superintendent had got up and given a talk about the new attitude, or that the patients had performed a play there under the supervision of an enthusiastic young doctor, and local drama clubs had been invited along with newspaper critics who had used the words promising, talented, therapeutic. One day, when a wildly struggling woman was dragged into the ward, we learned that she had been the lion's back legs and tail in And Crocodiles and the Lion. Ah, well, perhaps we were our own drama. There were two Christs, one Queen of Norway, no female Napoleons. There was Millie, as round as the moon, who had dressed up as a man, taken an axe and murdered three people on a lonely farm. There was Elna, who had held her child under the water in a washing tub, holding it there until it no longer struggled. There were those whose arms were folded close in cloth or canvas straitjackets, and there were the many who suffered from having no interesting delusions, who were not known as characters, and were not pointed out with pride because they had murdered or would murder or lay claim to European thrones. They were the self-centred, irritating epileptics, the paranoids, proud and persecuted, and the huddled quiet ones with sun-stained faces in their quietness, a different kind of violence, an assault on everything that we imagined human. There was no place for them but Parkhouse. They sat in the sun and rain alike, wearing no shoes or pants, their world or no world contained in their minds, and other people might as well have been planets or stones or anything as long as they were not identified. The violence of these patients lay in their refusal to name or be named. They sat in their straitjackets for meals at one of the long tables, and their throats were massaged to make them swallow, as if touch could provide some clue to the name and nature of their bodies. Then they would lumber out again into the sun or rain with their hands and feet disowned by their minds, and their blood heavy and blue and swollen. In the yard, unaccustomed to walking, they move swiftly like blue snowmen.